Three mates, three headlines, what's next?
Episode 6, an end of the year wrap up, and after the mixed feedback from last week, I'm going to avoid a poem today. Although we have got two very special guests with us on this occasion. But before we speak to them, and before we have a little look at the headlines, how was your Christmas, gentlemen?
Good, thanks, mate. Can't complain. My prediction last week of a 9 dart at Ali Pali came correct yesterday, and James Wade still lost, which is a lovely touch.
Any money on it, Jimmy?
Nah, of course not. Not a gambling man. Not after 2020. £2,000 down the drain. Stocks. Sky bet up. Never mind.
My Christmas was good, thanks. It was a quiet one, but I think pretty much the same as everyone else's. And very disappointed that Jimmy's prediction came right.
Scotty, Bobby, our guests, how are your Christmases?
Yeah, very good, mate. Very quiet, like everyone else's has been. But yeah, all right. Good to see a few people back for a couple of social distance pints. Not going to be having many more of them. Now we've been put in tier 4, so.
Yeah, strong Christmas from me as well. Very quiet. Had grandparents around, that was it. Disappointed to take the L in the foot yesterday as well, after a couple of goals from Scotty himself, probably why he's nailed the invite to the podcast. But no.
How'd you rate footballing skills yesterday, Bobby? Out of 10?
I'd probably stick That's myself generous. At 6.5.
That's really generous.
I think that is
Rob, generous. Remember all five of us were playing.
I was going to say, if you're a 6.5, we're all solid.
I often think that about half of your looks as well.
Built like a quiche, 2 left feet, 3 out of 10. Thanks for coming.
I actually didn't think you had
to
a bad
fair,
game.
To be fair, Jim, I netted a goal
good
with my left
goal.
Foot.
Good
yeah.
finish.
Yeah,
good
I thought goal. My left foot
I really
was
didn't
right.
think you had a bad game. Nice I also finish. Thought Doggy played well.
We're still all lost.
Not going to get a
all
weekly invite if I'm sucking up to the host.
Anyway, gentlemen, who is known for much joy and celebration the last week or so has brought many a headline. Marcus Rashford was voted the What's Next Sports Personality of the Year in a controversial vote in pipping Eddie Pepperell to the crown. I feel like some of the listeners maybe lost the personality aspect of that, but we'll let him have the win. Kieran Trippier has been banned for 10 months thanks to poor betting. Jesus tested positive on Christmas Day to leave City a striker down. They still had more than enough to get past Brucey's Mags. Liverpool and Spurs continue to drop points, inviting Man U into the challenger conversation. And Messi says he wants to play in the States, whilst Diego Costa has cancelled his contract at Atletico. The defending champs, the Lakers, have started 2-2 in the NBA, whilst record-breaking Giannis missed a buzzer-beating game-tying shot to lose on night one. Australia collapsed to lose the second test. Peter Wright and James Wade are both out of the Palace. Although, as Jimmy says, the latter did hit the perfect 9 darter, which he predicted a couple of episodes ago. Lastly, Tuchel has been sacked by PSG despite winning 4-0, and Pulis has been sacked after just 45 days in charge at Sheffield Wednesday. It has to be more than just a coincidence. Pulis to PSG. It's on.
Poch to Wednesday.
Poch to Wednesday.
Absolute stat though, Doiger. Can I just say, very impressed. That would have taken me years to write all that down.
Well, it took
Jimmy
a long time.
Articles you had to go through to get all that out.
Any thoughts on any of those, gentlemen?
Basketball for me. So one of my mates from uni never wanted to get into basketball. All of us in the uni house were quite into it. And he made a tweet a couple of nights ago and said, just turned on the NBA and seen the Clippers a 40 points down before half time. I think I found my basketball team. Little does he know they've also got Paul George and Kawhi Leonard. So when he starts supporting them and they're up there with favourites to win the title, he'll be laughing. But no, just glad there's a load of sport back. And I'm also hoping that this break in the Premier League season isn't going to happen. Seeing Sam Allardyce has been banging on about this.
Well, he was all for playing loads of football when they were drawing and picking up points. And as soon as he gets found out, he wants a break again.
He's a tosser. Yeah. He's an absolute prick.
Well, what if he listens to this podcast, Jimmy?
He can come and find this.
Tinners on it.
Yeah.
That's it. No, I think the Kieran Trippier is a pretty big thing, isn't it? Because there's quite a few of them getting bans. Daniel Sturridge got one as well. But I think the Tony Pulis is pretty unlucky. There's obviously something gone on there, but like I say, it would be great to see him at PSG.
So was Trippier betting?
I think it was just Eddie betting. I don't think it matters whether it's games he's involved in or not.
Can you imagine? Can you imagine he's got a double on Trippier to have four shots on target?
Have you not heard what this is about?
No.
He told all his mates that he was moving to Atletico Madrid and they all put money on it.
I think it's carried on from that, isn't it?
All right. I thought he had been betting on games, like he'd just been sat at home.
Well, he might have done, but it might have been a sort of backlash from them saying, well, because there was definitely something about him telling his pals that he was moving to Atletico Madrid.
Right.
It's not like he needs any more cash.
I don't think it was him betting, Rob.
Oh, well, then it's stupid from his pals. Then he should have just given them, like, charity.
My right back.
What are you on about, Rob? I was about to put money on you moving to Sheffield Collegiate last year. Do you reckon I would have been banned as well?
They had your name above the flag, and normally that's when I start believing.
Yeah, I think, to be fair, if we're going to go back to Sheffield, I'll pick up on the Wednesday one. I've obviously been, as you mentioned, Collegiate, been in a couple of group chats. They're all booting off about the fact that Pulis has been sacked again. But I've seen quite a lot of negativity directed at the chairman for the first thing he came in and did at the club was put his like company sticker all across the seats at one of the stand ends. It looks absolutely terrible, a bit like Mike Ashley did at the Sports Direct Arena when he renamed to that. Okay, so,
well, that's getting cut out.
As far as I'm aware,
it's got the name, you're never getting invited back, Rob. How about that?
The WWE dot. Yeah.
Sports Direct at St. James's Park.
Commercial game anymore.
How do you think Chef Wednesday fans rated Pulis to when they had Bruce?
Would you do a swap now, Scotty?
Come on, I'd swap Bruce for your dad. Literally any man on the planet that I have in front of him.
He's a lovely bloke, though.
Lee?
Right then. I know it's the last podcast we'll do in 2020, so we've gone for something slightly different this week. We're going to have a quick look back at 2020. Obviously, everything that's gone on, there's a few headlines that have stuck out to us, and we're going to go through some of those. I think Doig's probably got the more serious one, so I think we'll start with you, Doig. What's next?
Well, before I give my serious headline of the year, I've got a couple of my favourite 2020 lockdown highlights to give a mention to. The first one of those is Alex Hales hitting the first ever televised 8-dart finish during the PDC lockdown home series. Bryson DeChambeau lifting program, letting him drive further than Dominic Cummings. And Britney Spears for running faster than Usain Bolt in the summer with her world record 5K splits. We're all personal highlights, although my headline of the year today is taken from the New York Times in middle of July. And it was bubbles are working. But how long can sports stay inside? And obviously, this is with regard to the COVID-19 pandemic, which hits sport as hard as it has everything else. And I thought we'd just have a bit of a discussion about how well sport has been able to adapt to be able to have sport take place. As Scotty was just saying before, there's lots of sport going on to watch and to immerse yourself in. But almost at what cost is that? So the NBA, they took over Walt Disney. It cost them $170 million a team. Players were having to be given their food through post boxes type thing. Cricketers are flying around the world, having to quarantine for 14 days. They're having to stay at grounds, have hotels on site. Players are now opting out of tournaments because they don't want to be in that environment for any longer. So I guess the discussion is, how good is it to have sports at the moment at a time of such a pandemic? But is that cost worth the risk that it's putting these players at?
To me, these sportsmen all live pretty good lives. I've had it pretty cushy recently before this year, obviously. And now I think when you talk about, you see a lot of the England cricketers complaining that they're in this hotel. Yeah, you get it. It mustn't be nice. But think about, like, I know personally, watching sport over lockdown, when sport first started coming back, I was thinking to myself, I don't know how. Like, this is an absolute saving grace here. I don't know how I'd go without it. So for me, as much as a lot of pros won't like it, I feel like the amount of... I'd also be interested to see the viewing numbers of sporting events in lockdown. I would have presumed that they've gone up because everyone else hasn't got much better to do. So I would have thought that... it's been brilliant for the country getting it back. But also, I do think it was probably worth... all these athletes going through what they're having to do just because I reckon half of them will want to do it. They'll want to get the. They don't want to sit in the garden or sit on the sofa watching movies. They'll want to be going out and playing. There will be some that will probably not want to play much longer after this because they think I'm done with this. Who are on their in the later stages, but I'm all for it. And I know I'm not the one having to quarantine before I go and get bowled out for 60 odd like the Indians did or whatever it was. But no, I'm all for it, and I think it should go on like this.
I think the comparison to sort of look at, I think the Premier League is quite a good example. In July, when this article was written, the Premier League were doing an unbelievable job and no games were cancelled. There were very few, if any, positive cases because the bubbles were actually biosecure and they were sticking to it, etc. Yet, even this evening, there's talk of a game being cancelled. Man City have just cancelled against Everton. Obviously, Newcastle had their game against Palace a week or so ago that was cancelled. There's far more positive cases happening now. It wasn't that long ago the Barbarians' bio bubble was breached. They had lots of cancellations. They cancelled their game against England because they had lots of positive tests and things like that. So do you think there's a naivety around sport now that it's going to get caught up as much of the same as everyone else and actually they maybe need a bit of a reality check and say, yes, if you are going to entertain the country and Premier League was allowed to come back to be a morale booster for everyone, actually the sports need to take it a bit more seriously and accept that the way England, the West Indies did it in the summer where it was, you are in a hotel bubble, you go out of the hotel to the cricket pitch and then you go from the cricket pitch back to the hotel. Do they just need to accept that for a couple of months, a year, possibly, they just need to do that and that's almost their right and duty as a sports performance, as an entertainer, ultimately?
Imagine saying to someone, you're not allowed home for a year.
Yeah.
What a shitter. I genuinely don't think you can turn around to someone, though, and say, you're not allowed home for a year. Stay in this hotel, stay in your bubble, go to your games, go to training, go home. There is absolutely no way these players would do it. And they would say, well, why are we doing that when I'm allowed? Well, for me personally, I can go to work and go home and see my family do that. You can all do that. You might be working from home, but so Andy, for example, being a teacher, you're allowed to go into your school, do your lessons. And then I know you're not, well, you're living down there, but you can go home at the end of the day. Like, if they can't do that, I don't think that's fair. You can't expect that of them, no matter how highly they're paid.
Yeah, I was just going to say, Jimmy, are you sacrificing, I don't know how much these players get paid a year. You say $1 million a year for certain sports.
I'm not necessarily sure that's got anything to do with it. I don't think that the amount they get paid necessarily has a significant value. No, I don't think it does, though, because at the end of the day, I think that these individuals are very privileged in what they get to do. They get to go and represent their country, get to go and represent their club, and represent however many individuals throughout the UK in whatever sport that they do, whether that be cricket, football, rugby, whatever they may choose. And I think that the way in which some of those individuals have behaved whilst having that privilege to be able to continue to do what they do, whereas so many others haven't been able to do that throughout the UK, I think is in some ways a little bit selfish. But then if you look at it from an alternate point of view, the way that some of their health, both physically and mentally, is suffering as a result of this is absolutely barbaric. I think that there was something from the old Rajasthan Royals head coach talking about Ben Stokes and Jofra Archer. And you look at the summers that they've just had, Jofra Archer pretty much not single-handedly, but being a massive contributor to England's World Cup success. Ben Stokes effectively single-handedly winning England the World Cup final last year. And then if they go into these biosecure bubbles, well, as you say, they're away from home for a year and they're massively struggling and they're not going to be able to have that release that they normally have, the performances are going to dip and ultimately you're not going to get everything that you would expect out of them. I remember an old cricket coach that we had, Martin Spain, used to say that when you got to the top level of sport, it's 5% ability and the rest is all mental strength. So if everyone at the top level is competing at such a similar level, and then you're making them stay in these bubbles where, as you say, they're going to go and do what they do, come back into the hotel, not allowed to leave the room, not mix with anyone. And it's just not going to be sustainable, I don't think, going forwards. And I think that it is good that some stars are now looking to kind of find alternate outlets for it. I've seen Ben Stokes on the Warzone streaming with a couple of streamers now, getting that all over the Instagram, which isn't exactly the best. But I think that these players are struggling. And I think that there's been many individuals that are identifying that, but I think the public are holding them to a significantly high regard at times. And I think to look at them in that selfish
I think
way
in the day and age
wrong.
When they're talking so much about mental health as well, you can't throw people into that environment.
I think it's slightly different probably for the Premier League if you try to do it with all those footballers over a 30-year game season. That's a hell of a lot longer than what some of these franchise tournaments are. And I imagine, I don't know what would be harder, coming in and out of bubbles all over the world and having to do that self-isolation or being in that biosecure bubble for a full Premier League season or Championship season, which is obviously a lot longer. I imagine we've seen people like Tom Banton and Tom Curran who have gone from bio bubbles in England and the IPL and then going over to the Big Bash, which is slightly lenient, or they can do a little bit more in those bubbles, but they've decided that it's not worth it to go over and do that. I just think if it was a Premier League season, for how long that is, I just don't think we could probably make footballers go into that kind of long period in a bubble. I just think the mental health would be shorter. And we've seen it already, haven't we? People are obviously taking risks at the minute because, like Doig said earlier on, this game's been cancelled all over because people are obviously doing slightly more than they should have.
I would love a weekly update. And I know, how Phil Foden and Mason Greenwood are getting on, sneaking lasses back to their hotel.
And Jofra Archer. It's the only reason he did so well in the summer. He breached the bio bubble.
He's going to see Chris Jordan, man. Leave it out.
I'm just going to play devil's advocate here when you're saying, like, can't expect it of them. So, I get what you're saying. I completely agree with what you're saying with parts of it. But it's like I said before, when you're in lockdown and there was literally nothing to do and you were like counting down the days till the football started or the cricket started or whatever, and they are privileged and they've got a sacrifice, I don't know, being away from home or stuff, getting paid unbelievably well. And I also think that, for instance, say the England cricket team were going to go and do a tour of wherever and they had to quarantine when they weren't playing, literally weren't allowed to leave, blah, blah, blah. If, for instance, Joe Root, Jofra Archer didn't want to do it, you would have very good county players snapping your hand off to go and play for England there. Like, people would, like, be desperate to play. And I would have thought that it would take some big stones to turn down a contract because, or turn down sort of a tour or something like that because you didn't want to do it. When you're paid to do that and you look at, when you just don't talk about sport, you look at everything else, everyone else is having to do things at the moment that they really don't want to do, sort of like nurses and type of thing. So sport-wise, I get what you mean with the mental health and stuff, but I think that if it's not going to affect you terribly, and like Rob said, barbaric, I mean, if it's not, that does sound terrible. I'm not sure everyone's going to be feeling like it's barbaric. But if it's all right, then I'm absolutely all for it. If it's not going to completely affect your mental health,
I think. So Scotty, a couple of weeks ago, we discussed Tom Banton pulling out of the IPL, and we were discussing the England 11 for the World Cup 2020, and we were almost of the opinion that him, the likes of Livingston, Vince, at that point, Tom Curran was still going across as well. He's obviously pulled out. Players were almost needing to go and have a good IPL, have a good Big Bash, as we were saying. Yeah. To be in that World T20 squad. Obviously, it was going to be a payday for him as well. Has he potentially scuppered his chances from that? Because he has himself put his mental health and his own well-being first, as much as he's then signed up for a T10 league to start in January type thing. But
yeah, so yeah. That's a difficult one because you've got to put yourself first. Like, there's no point in Tom Curran doing everything he can to go to the World Cup if he's not the same bloke anymore. And he's struggling with everything. And there is no point in doing that, right? But what I'm saying is you've got the likes of, I don't know, someone that is like Liam Dawson, right? So he was in the squad, not really done much. If you did a survey, what their team's going to be, I reckon he would be in maybe 1% of surveys and they're just his pals, right? So say Liam Dawson's gets asked to come on a tour because, I don't know, Rashid, some players don't want to go. I would be very surprised if Liam Dawson did not snatch someone, the selector's hand off and go, right, okay, this is my chance. Do you know what I mean? And I feel like if someone's going to drop out, it's different with Ben Stokes and Jofra Archer because you can't really replace them. But there's a lot of players that are up for debate, like you said in the last podcast, and either players that won't want to go they'll be replaced and it's a massive chance for them, or they'll stay and be like, well, if I go, then I'll be replaced. It's a tough it's an anomaly. You'll never sort of have something like this again. It's a tough time. It just depends on what people want to do. But like you said, it's not worth going if your mental health is shot and you're not the same person and you're not going to play as well as you want to do.
I think you've got to look at things past the mental health side as well. I think that if you look, as you mentioned there, about players such as Stokes, he's got two kids at home and like effectively growing up without a dad when you're around that age. I mean, I don't know specifically how old they are, probably between the ages of 6 and 8. You grow up without a dad for a year there, that's a significantly long period of time to have that missing from your life. And I think that not being able to see your kids or be able to have that family interaction as you normally would in this period is, I don't think that that's necessarily the right way to approach it at all. But even going back, you look at like the test series in Down Under when England won the documentary, The Test, there was a large proportion of it focusing on Jonathan Trott's mental health. And that was in terms of like the strenuous nature of all the training camps, all the pressure from the whole country that they felt on them at the time after the summer that they had and going into the Ashes as the massive team that has to win everything. All the media pressure as well. And I think that all of that is currently going on will be exacerbated by the whole COVID pandemic. And I just think the individuals in those bubbles that will be undergoing exactly the same pressure. And I'm not just talking cricket specific here. You look at someone like Steve Bruce that everyone rinses at the moment. He will be under massive, massive pressure at the moment with his job at Newcastle because he's getting slated by every single person, like all you lot,
so,
basically.
The Premier League have obviously got the money. They can test all the time. Is COVID going to, and these bubbles and almost the desire that they need to put sport out there is potentially going to collapse League One down football teams, some lower end Premiership rugby teams who are having to test all the time, who they can't afford to do it or concede games and get themselves relegated. A lot of county championship teams in the summer, should they still need to be doing the same sort of thing, and potentially some national cricket boards like Zimbabwe, Bangladesh, Pakistan, West Indies, they're not rich, rich cricket boards. They can't afford to be tested. But when Pakistan came across here in the summer, 14 of their players had COVID before they flew. They had to quarantine for even longer and put them up, and they said that was at great expense to the cricket board, but they went through with it because the ECB were paying it. Were they flying anywhere else in the world, they wouldn't have done it. So is COVID and the desire to put sport out there actually going to cost sport in the long run? Something like a UFC that have done the Fight Island and things like that, they can probably afford to put that up. Eddie Hearn can afford to foot the bill of a fight in his garden. He can afford to write off one Anthony Joshua fight with 78,000 less fans in a stadium. But he won't be able to do that for 2-3 more fights for Anthony Joshua. The UFC won't be able to do that for 2-3 more years if McGregor's back fighting. Football won't be able to do that beyond the championship for the next year or two. And is it actually that desire to put a bubble in going to cost sport more in the long run than it has for our benefit now for a couple of months worth of, oh, we've got the football to look forward to tonight?
I think that with the points you've raised there, I think that there has been a lot of onus placed, specifically from the English perspective, on the international sides being able to quarantine and fit in those bubbles, and obviously the international boards that they have, whether that be the rugby, whether that be the cricket, whether that be any other sport, they have the funds and the ability to do that. And I think that in terms of what you said about the Premier League and the Championship, that's all funded from the clubs themselves. But I totally agree with the point that the fact that anything low there is absolutely scuppered. Like places that are only getting sort of 2,000 or 3,000 fans in a game that are requiring those fans' income in order to stage these games and pay their players. A lot of these players won't be taking any wage cuts, whether that be from their own point of view or that, whether it be just how they're contracted. They're, no matter what anyone says, they're contractually obliged not to have to take these pay drops. And I think that clubs like that are massively going to struggle. And I think that what ultimately we are going to see, in my opinion, is a massive, massive reduction in the amount of grassroots football. And then that'll have a subsequent knock-on effect in 2 or 3 years' time with respect to those kids that are going to be coming into academies and things such as that. I think that this couple of years, as you'd call it, like the COVID generation, so to speak, I think is going to have a massive knock-on in terms of abilities of footballers, cricketers, rugby players, netballers, hockey players that are going to be coming through and ultimately are going to be having to fill up those national squads in the next few years. I think it's incredibly difficult.
I think serious. It's an important one. I think it's so hard, and it is. There is so much of a discussion that can be had about it, and almost to some extent, as Jimmy says, I'm sick of talking about COVID full stop across the year, but the impact it has on sport is as big as it is on anyone. You think of us just as a group, how it delays our cricket season, it delays what football you can play, it delays what football you can go and watch as a spectator. How many people rely on going to watch that Saturday football game because they can go to the pub at 12 o'clock and have a couple of drinks and go to the football for 3 o'clock and then have a couple of pints after. And there's a day taken out of their weekend where they're usually so alone and they're left out. So it's not just the players' mental health, but the fans' mental health and their well-being as well. Whereas now, again, going into Tier 4 or whatever they've just announced, it is literally you can see one person outside and that is it. And if you haven't got one person to go and see, again, as Scotty said at the start, there probably is actually a bit of an emphasis on sport, right? Give them the staggered 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock, whatever it might be, football that someone can actually sit and watch and enjoy and not miss 8 of the games in a weekend, but they can actually see all 10.
This lockdown was the first time I'd ever sat and watched a test match from the first ball of the day to the last ball of the day. And it was Zach Crawley as well. I was just like, is this what life has come to?
Tinners used to sit and score them from his living room.
That's the most believable thing I've ever heard.
Let's move on. Tinners, we'll come to you. What's next?
Being a Liverpool fan, obviously quite a big year for Liverpool. So I've gone with the with BBC, and basically they put Liverpool win Premier League after 30 years of away at the top flight, the title ends. So it's one of those where it's 30 years wait for a title, happy days. I just want to talk about how good Liverpool were, was the way that the season panned out. Obviously, don't discuss too much of COVID in that because we've just touched on it, but how good were the Liverpool team compared to other kind of teams that have won the league recently? How good are these now still as well? But also just to kind of discuss Premier League football last season as well. I'm sure Jimmy will be over the moon to talk about Newcastle and Joe Linton again.
I'm going to bring up one of my favourite arguments from this sort of past year, 18 months, if you include that football. I suppose that's technically a year still. Is that argument between this Liverpool team and the Arsenal Invincibles. Because this will get you rattled. Who's better, Sean?
Liverpool.
Of course they are. Lad from Durham, and you even say Liverpool like a proper Scouser now. Liverpool? Liverpool?
The Liverpool winning the league does come with a massive asterisk, though, doesn't it?
Oh, huge. Biggest asterisk ever. They didn't even beat Man City's total points from a couple of years ago. And they're trying to say it's the best team ever. Arsenal went to season and beat Man City the Centurions. Man United's treble. Newcastle's almost winning the league. Everton winning the league after four games this season. Get back in your place.
I still think they are... I'd arguably put them above the Arsenal team. I don't think... If I was to sit and watch Liverpool or Man City, I think it's difficult to say who I'd prefer to watch. I prefer to watch Liverpool than my team. But on how they play, when they play against each other, it's an unbelievable game. And I'd argue that them two are the two top teams with the two top managers over the last kind of 10, 15 years. The Invincibles, obviously great. We've discussed that before. But I think they were probably playing in a slightly easier period.
I think the Liverpool team from last year and the previous year was very good when they won Champions League, Premier League, and I'm not counting Jordan Henderson's sports personality. That doesn't count as one of the trophies. Although the way that Jurgen Klopp was banging on about it on the "Is an acceptance" speech was just ridiculous. Trying to think it was the best thing ever, but I think that in terms of as a side to have come and performed the way they did in the Premier League last year, going on that massive unbeaten run, that has to count for something compared to, as you say, like City's 100-pointer that I know you've discussed before. And also Arsenal's Invincibles team.
How many Liverpool games did you watch last year, Rob?
My housemate was a Liverpool fan, so quite a few. I had to sit through quite a lot of them. And I remember when they eventually beat by Wolves, I think it was. I want to say. I don't know if that's a lie.
It was Watford. Got a W, though.
Watford. I knew it began with a W. Yeah. Which wasn't a very good day. But I personally loved watching them. I think they were brilliant to watch.
How did they not break 100 points?
Because they won the league.
Won the league early, and they were still able to focus.
Not as early as Liverpool.
Not with COVID.
Yeah, Liverpool won earlier than anyone else, and they also had a massive break when they know they won the league. And I think that if they'd played like the season that City did with no interruptions, I think they would have got 100 points.
Yeah, I think it's one of those.
I think that City team, I think that City team was one of if not the best Premier League teams ever.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. There's no doubt about it. I mean, to get the points they did and how good they were, I think it's just the difference of how they play and stuff like that. I always just watch. I mean, you watch Liverpool against West Brom the other day, and they weren't great, but you always thought there was something left there. Sometimes I'll watch City now, probably more than ever, and think there's something missing. And I think the Liverpool team last year was nearly as good as the Man City team that broke the record. Arguably, obviously, statistically wise, they weren't, but the unbeaten run they went on, all of that kind of thing. I think it was just they were an exceptional team, and they still are. And I think to win the to lose the Champions League final, to then win the Champions League, to then win the league, I think that's a pretty exceptional 3 years.
Yeah. So I was talking to a lad from work, and we were talking about whether Bruce was going to get sacked. And I looked on Sky Bet, and the second favourite manager to get sacked was Frank Lampard at 3-1. And we're thinking, now, Chelsea won't have signed Frank Lampard as manager to win a season, to win the title in his first season. You sign Frank Lampard and you sign Arteta from Arsenal as like a project, at least sort of 3 years, see how far you can go, unless you like Arsenal and you are in the relegation battle. So it's different, obviously, with Bruce. But so when Klopp came in and they saw Klopp made some bad signings and he inherited a bad Liverpool team. And like, was it 6 years ago they finished like eighth behind West Ham? And like they had, like the Liverpool front three was Balotelli, Barini.
Zero
and
goals in eight minutes.
Do you know what I mean? It's like,
yeah, that was good, that.
Decent three.
Do you know what I mean? So he's inherited a bad team. But they were a good team before that as well. So they sort of, they've always been a roller coaster. It was like, well, Gerrard's famous slip. Thing is, they were so close to win the league there, but and there are anomalies like Leicester, but a team that wins the league has got to be pretty well-rounded. And in that season, they were playing people like, you had players like Kolo Touré in like in his latter years, and you're sort of relying on Suarez, Sturridge, Sterling coming through. Whereas Klopp, when he came in, he has signed some bad players. I was looking at them before. He spent £500 million. And he has brought some dodgy players
his ability to identify a gap they need filling with a specific player. And we've said it before with like Genie going across there and fitting in there seamlessly. When Jimmy made the point a couple of weeks ago about he couldn't play as soon as he crossed the Tyne Bridge type thing for us. And all of a sudden for them, he's one of their key midfielders and he fits their system.
Do you reckon that is fully Klopp?
No, but he's still brought him in.
Picked every single player. Yeah, that's true, and they play a certain way, and you could just see in the last 4 years they finished. I think they finished in the top four for the last 4 years, fourth, second, first. I think it was, and every year they were sort of consolidating and building that team around. It wasn't just bringing in players, but players improving. 5 years ago, Trent had never played.
Coming back to that, This is where Liverpool are quite good.
Robertson was working in Marks and Spencer.
This is where Liverpool are quite good, that they'll give a manager an opportunity to build a squad. I can't see Abramovich and Chelsea saying to Frank Lampard, right, you've spent however much in the summer, the best part of £200 million, and you've not really taken us any further forward. Well, personally, I don't really rate Frank Lampard as a manager, but I also don't see Chelsea sticking with him if he's not. I don't see Chelsea doing with Lampard what Liverpool did with Klopp. So to say, fourth and fourth. Expect to be challenging Liverpool and City to win the league. And one, I don't think Lampard's good enough to take them there, but I think they will get rid of him faster than anyone else would have done with their manager.
With Rio Ferdinand and Lampard, and he basically went to the training ground. And I was watching it thinking that the same thing, really, of how long can Chelsea really give Frank Lampard as manager? They've given him the job as a second job. Realistically, it must be a there must be a plan they've got. They must want to change their ways, keep a manager for a long period of time. Or what was the point of him taking it? Obviously, it's a job he would never turn down, I imagine. The same as if Gerrard gets offered the Liverpool job, I imagine it would be impossible to turn down. But at the same time, he's taken a big chance on him by giving him the job so early. But surely it's them trying to change their way and say, we want you to be Gaffer for 10 to 15 years. We want you to build a team. He's the money. Right. If he hadn't had the transfer ban, would he have brought in a couple of players then and then a couple of players this year instead of bringing and spending the 200 million that he did this year, which obviously always is difficult to bed so many players in. Werner and Kai Havertz haven't really hit the ground running, but people like Chilwell have. So I just can't see it being a short-term thing. I think he's going to give him a long period of time. And if after 4 years he's not challenging, maybe that's when he turns around and says, not many managers
he
get 4 years.
Get his first window.
I agree with that.
Do you think that he's coming slightly too early? So I think that if you look at somewhere like Liverpool, I know that Klopp has achieved exceptional things over the time he's been at Liverpool. As he said, they've had a fantastic 3 years. But in my opinion, I would say that when he decides that he moves on, or when I assume that he's not going to get sacked, the successes that they're having at the moment. But when he does take that decision to move on, do you think that someone like Gerrard's going to be a natural fit to slide right back in? And do you think that is something that potentially Lampard could have done, stayed at Derby a little bit longer?
I would have thought. So. I think Gerrard's proven himself. I know Scottish football is slightly different to the Premier League, but I think he's proven himself with the Rangers job and who he's signing. And he's been very clever with who he's signing, using the people that he knows and signing the right people. And they keep signing contracts and they keep seeming to expire at exactly the same time. So I know that's the likelihood of that being connected is very low, but realistically looking at it, at some point, you can't see. Klopp doesn't stay at teams very long. It will be the longest he stayed, I imagine. And he might extend it and Gerrard might stay at Rangers a little bit longer, but I think when Klopp goes, whether he packs in, whether he moves on to a different club, Gerrard will be the next one in. And I think that'll be a better timing than the Lampard from Derby to...
Yeah.
Because I don't think Lampard really has a way of playing. I don't think you could turn around and say, yep, this is how he plays. I don't think at Derby he proved enough. Whereas I think when Klopp came into Liverpool, it's like, right, this is going to how we play. This is it. He's going to sign the people that fit the way he plays, and that's simple. And I think Gerrard will do the same by then. I think he'll have a way of playing to come to the Premier League.
They didn't hire Frank Lampard on merit of what he's achieved as a manager in the game. He didn't get promoted with Derby. They played good football with Derby. I lived with four Derby fans at uni. They absolutely loved it, the football they were playing. They had players like Harry Wilson on loan from Liverpool in the Championship, who was just scoring goals for fun. They had Mason Mount. They had a very good team, and he did play good football with Derby. It was an early move, but again, I completely agree with what Sean was saying. They've brought him in as a project. Like, if they wanted to bring someone in to win a title next year, they would have gone for someone like an Ancelotti again, or just a big name. Who's the lad from Juventus? Allegri. That's not with anyone at the moment. Allegri, yeah. So they would have brought something like that in. And the thing is with Chelsea, they've done that a load in the past. Like you said, Chelsea managers don't get long in a job. I feel like they've realised, right, we are falling back here quickly from Liverpool and Man City. Instead of giving managers 18 months, not winning the title, right, we'll go again. It's clearly not worked over the past, or however long it's been. Conte, he won the league with them and then he was gone within a year.
Do you know what I mean?
It's like,
Scotty, do you think there's a lot of the Chelsea players stop playing for the manager? Because if you think about Mourinho winning the league and then the next year them being hopeless, Conte winning the league, next year being hopeless. Yeah. But then now it's like, well, they'll play for Lampard because he's a legend there. So they're not going to turn on him, no matter how bad the results are. Do you not think that's got something to play in it as well?
Slightly, yeah. You could have the same argument with Arteta. A lot of the Arsenal squad played with Arteta at Arsenal. Would they turn on him? It's a difficult one, and you probably won't know that unless you've played to a very high level and you've seen it in the past. Like, we haven't got a clue. No. You hear about players turning on them and put stuff. But to assume that you wouldn't know, I just think obviously there is the bookies are never really wrong. So they're having it at 3-1. They clearly know something, but and like, where are they now? Are they're fifth in the league? And there's so we were talking about top four. We think it'll be me and the lads from it. We were saying Liverpool, Man United, who are second, which still blows my mind. And then you've got to fit in Tottenham, who were near title challengers a couple of weeks ago. You've then got to fit in Man City, who will inevitably climb up the league. You've got Chelsea with Lampard, and then also Leicester playing brilliant football. But then they go and play a half team against Crystal Palace, draw, should have got beat, really.
As much as you, I would want to say it, there's Everton who are in fourth, and Aston Villa will drop off, I hope, at some point. So Everton, but you can't argue with the way teams are stood at the minute. And like Jimmy said, he's made all these signs and they've kind of just stood still a little bit. They haven't seemed to move on anywhere. So I think it's going to be an interesting season. Like we said, it's different for other reasons, but I think it's going to be a strange season.
If it was Newcastle, so if I was a Newcastle fan,
you are a Newcastle fan.
Obviously, when we got Bruce, it was. Well, I am a Newcastle fan, you're right. It's like when we signed Bruce, it's not like you're not on the edge of your seat, right? And it's like, how long is he going to get? No one really knows. He could be here a while. He could be gone tomorrow. It would be like, for me, I would quite like, at the moment with Newcastle, I would quite like a young manager to come in that had his own vision, had his own way of playing. And yet, it won't go right first time of asking. Like, it very, very rarely does. It's just, I feel like, at the moment with Newcastle, rather than just sitting, we've been through Pardew, McLaren, Carver, and it's like, everyone was more excited about it back then than they are now. And you'd never guess. Like, it's horrendous now. I'd much rather if we had, like, a young manager with his own style of playing and, like, actually trying to put that on the squad rather than... So, like, the way that the route that Chelsea have gone down, where we're sort of where they were, where they used to be. So, like, getting managers in just to try and perform. Like Bruce says, my job's to stay in the Premier League. That's what we're doing. We had Rafa, and then everyone knows how that went. But I would really like it if Newcastle went down the Chelsea route or the Arsenal route of getting someone in who isn't necessarily completely proven. I mean, is Bruce necessarily proven? He's got a win percent ratio of about 27. So I think Chelsea and Arsenal were right to go down the Arteta and Lampard route. And I think it is unfair to sort of be like, right, okay, Chelsea are in fifth. They should be challenging. I don't think that's fair to put that all on Lampard, and I think they should stick with him. Arteta's a different one at Arsenal because they are... I mean, they've just picked up two wins, which has helped them a lot. But before then, you did have to talk to them about relegation in that conversation. But I still think they should stick with the two young managers. It's the way it should be going.
All right, and before we move on to the next topic, I'll have a little quick go-around. What's your top four? Quick fire, no time to think about it. Bob, you go first. Who's your top four?
City, Liverpool, United, Jimmy? Tottenham.
City, Liverpool, Spurs, Chelsea, just.
Scotty?
Liverpool, City, Man United, and I'll go Leicester.
I was going to go that same top four as Scotty in that order.
Nice. Mine will be Liverpool, Man City, Man United, Spurs. Right. Discussed that enough, I think. We'll move on to Jimmy. So, Jimmy, what's next?
Right. So, my article comes from The Times back on Saturday, the 20th of June. And it is in reference to Neil Mopay's comments post Arsenal versus Brighton at home. And the article is Neil Mopay stuns flimsy Arsenal in hot-tempered finale. And he obviously came out with those comments after where he said, Arsenal need to learn a little bit of humility. So what I want to have a sort of different take on, a little bit linking back to last week's alternative sports personality of the year, is I want to look at the sporting whoppers of 2020 and would like to open up the floor to any suggestions. My first one, linking back to the article, is going to be Neil Mopay.
I would like to dive in with an earlier nomination for Whopper of the Year, and that is Novak Djokovic, who pretty much early on in the year put his hands up and said COVID is not a thing type thing, put on his own tournament, hosted loads of professional tennis players, got them to travel around the world, and then contracted COVID, and all of them at the tournament got COVID and had to cancel the tournament. So for being a non-believer and for being insensitive with his comments and actions, I would like to nominate Novak Djokovic for Whopper of the Year.
Yeah, he's definitely a flat earther as well. You can tell just looking at him.
Can I add on to that? He also played in the US Open and pinned one of the line judges with the ball. Just because he was going to be one of my nominations, but just the fact that he did that is a bit of a whopper.
Did you see his thing a couple of years ago where he got arsy with a reporter when they said that he was close to hitting people with the balls and it could focus with him, also sort of could end with him getting suspended and disqualified from competitions, and he absolutely went off it saying, why would I ever hit someone with a ball? I'm skilled enough. I'm never going to hit the ball at them. And then it cut to that 4 years later. There was a brilliant video of it. He could win it. Second shout in. Probably not focused my attentions on Neil Mope when Novak Djokovic was out there.
The other nomination I've got for Whopper of the Year is, it's sort of two in one, but I'm hoping it's the same person. One of them is what we mentioned last week, and that is the bloke that didn't switch on the VAR line technology there that should have relegated Villa, and we wouldn't have them top of the league or near the top of the league at the moment. And the other one is whoever was the cameraman when Newcastle played Liverpool, maybe, in the middle of the lockdown, and we scored after about 20-odd seconds, and it wasn't caught on TV.
Yeah.
Absolute joker. Whopper of the year.
Very good.
There's a few that I would say. He's not a sportsman, but he's involved in the sporting world. Greg Clark, FA chairman. Massive whopper for his comments that he came out with. I don't know anyone that... He's just a knacker, what he came out with. Like, he's one of the sort of most powerful men in English football, and he comes out with that. Just sheer, like, it just... Just being thick and insensitive.
What about the Leeds Twitter admin calling out the Amazon Prime analyst last night?
Yeah, it's been some good ones of that.
Yeah, he's not a whopper, he's a legend. She deserves everything she's getting. Like, if I'm not being funny, if I don't know, if Alan Shearer had said that and everyone was abusing him, no one would be kicking off.
Michael Owen, you know what I mean?
Yeah, Steve McManaman says it every week.
Actually, I might just put Michael Owen in as Whopper of the Year for 2020 just because that bloke is constantly a whopper.
Get some of his quotes up, Jimmy. Just entertain us.
He just needs to take a break from sport. Just stop. There's a global pandemic on. If that's not bad enough, Michael, listening to you commentate on some of the games on BT Sport is toxic. You and Savage. Savage, Whopper of the Year, Rochdale away, back in January, got put in his place before anything of 2020 ever occurred.
Footballers these days often have to use their feet. Nice one, Michael.
I think I've got a couple of What Revere nominees. I was for some reason watching Soccer AM on Saturday, and Jimmy Bullard was on one of his you know the drills, and Jamie Carragher's come with one of the best two-footed tackles I've ever seen on live TV, which could have caused a severe broken leg. Obviously, reminiscing of his days back in Liverpool. So he's up there, and then also the bloke who does the IPL stadium noise for literally sounding like you're in downtown Delhi every time a single scored. It's absolutely intolerable. It's really bad with
I actually think whoever's idea it was to put stadium noise in.
Yeah,
full stop. Yeah, any sport. Do you know what, Jim? We'll just extend that to every sport. Yeah, I think it's terrible. It's the first thing that goes off as soon as
have they put it on the darts this year?
I don't know, but I think to be fair. Yeah, they've done that with Championship sides. I noticed that on Ben Foster's YouTube. They had the crowd noise playing over the speakers in the stadium.
It was a QPR though, wasn't it? Like, that was only a QPR. It doesn't happen at every ground.
Barnsley, it was happening there. I think it's a bit of a surprise for the Liverpool fans because they get to hear more than just one rendition of You'll Never Walk Alone throughout the whole game, which is a nice touch for them.
To be fair, with 2,000 fans and you think they've left the noise on, it's that loud. Creating a bit of atmosphere at Anfield, aren't they, Shawnee?
I won't bite.
Absolute miss.
I won't bite. Yeah, it is, by the way, Sean. Like, the atmosphere at Anfield, everyone says the best in the world. Get down to Blue Star on a Sunday. Honestly. Who was the darts player that had his walkout song as You Raise Me Up?
Cheng-An Louis. That he could be Cheng-An Louis. I'm looking at it now.
That was really good. I think I'm not sure if he goes in for the whoppers, but I think as a walk-on song in the Ali Pali when you've got a load of people on the pints, not entirely sure that would go.
He's more deserving of the alternate sports personality than Marcus Rashford is.
Late nomination. Get it on the poll.
Yeah, fuck Rashford.
mine will be Vernon Philander for the very start of the year when he just let the ball hit his big gut and Butler just abused him. And then he got Butler out in the fourth test, I think, later on in the series, just before they came home, and he gave him a massive send-off and then got fined even more than Butler did. And Flanders just a bit of a chop anyway. So
you kind of call him a whopper because he's fat.
I just did.
I'm just looking at some Michael Owen quotes from what we were saying before. There's a few good ones. Yeah, he's elbowed him in the head, but there's nothing in it for me. it's hit the facial part of his head there.
I would love, I'd love to hear his take on the Craig Dawson volleying Che Adams in the head last night.
That yeah. was horrific. Wow. One that I really enjoyed from earlier in the year for Whopper of the Year, which is also a massive credit of the year, I think, was Danny Lee, the golfer, who six-putted from 4 foot six and then claimed a wrist injury and walked off.
Yeah. Yeah, I did enjoy that. That was brilliant.
Incredible. What a time for that. I mean, even just going through the sort of social media now and having a look, recently, Pele?
Yeah.
Just had a record broken and he's put another 300-odd goals out of thin air.
Hey, go for that one, Messi. Good luck.
Pele is an absolute... I don't even know if it's him or Santos who are trying to push it, but someone...
It was Santos that started it, but then Pele has agreed with, obviously. Just give it that.
Biggest whopper of the year is potentially the Argentinian rugby captain who was such a legend, having beaten the All Blacks and drawn with Australia, was giving the most inspirational pre-game talks, was speaking to the referee as if he was the greatest bloke ever, and then a week later was stripped of the captaincy for racist tweets.
Is Chris Robshaw a whopper, or was it quite funny what he did when he basically just took the bar bars and piss up rather than play in England?
I don't necessarily think that's a whopper. I think that's again a kind of a getting out the COVID bubble, losing
not
your
a good a reason as Jofra Archer was reaching the bubble, but yeah, only went high.
Yeah, exactly. I agree with that. I'm gonna go in with, and I know again you touched on this a couple of weeks ago with your sports personality, but I'm gonna put Hamilton in there. I think that the way that he carries on, and the fact that he is such a massive activist for the environment and the climate, he's gone vegan, yet he literally drives a car around a circuit as fast as he can that does about 5 miles to the gallon, and has done for the last 10 years, and is nice. and is currently sponsored by Tommy Hilfiger, who are just going to ruin the environment with all the fast fashion that they've got going on.
You literally wear Tommy Hilfiger. That's the only club you wear. And you're slating Lewis Hamilton.
Scotty, I'm not a climate activist like he is. I don't bang it all over my Twitter all the time. He does. I think he's up there with one of the biggest bell pieces on the circuit, to be fair. I think that when he came in to the F1, he was brilliant. He revitalised it because he was the young lad. He was rapid. He'd been through all the programmes. And then he set the fame, like the young driver programme, so to speak. And then he set the fame get to his head, and he's just turned
Lewis
into an
a bit of
bell
a,
piece.
He's a bit of a Billy Big Bollocks, but he always delivers. That's the one thing I will say.
The postman.
It's like the postman. I think that with what someone said the other week about Russell... What?
Oh, never mind. Just you keep doing your thing, Rob.
I think that with like a bit like with Russell coming into Hamilton's car and doing so well and brilliantly, kind of a bit like Sam Allardyce claiming that he could have done what Klopp had done at Liverpool.
But Allardyce could do at Liverpool what Klopp has done as much as I could get in Hamilton's car and still do well in the Formula One. Like, it's all about the tools that you've got.
Yeah, but at the same time. Yeah, but at the same time, Klopp couldn't do what Allardyce has done at West Brom with those players.
Do you reckon this is the first time Lewis Hamilton's ever been compared to Sam Allardyce?
Sam Allardyce is a whopper. He's in it as well.
Just because he's quickly
realised that his West Brom team aren't very good, and now he wants a quick circuit breaker so he can have 2 weeks training.
Well, have you seen him saying, like, I don't feel safe because I'm 66 years old, I don't want to catch
COVID. Don't take the job, then.
I know. Have you seen the way he wears his masks on the touchline? Literally has it over one ear and one nostril.
But none of the other managers have been wearing the masks. So what? Like,
they've all been tested.
Don't take the job.
Can it fit on his fat bum?
Definitely believes that masks don't prevent the spread of COVID. He does not wear a mask. He has stood at Monument on a weekend protesting against wearing masks going into shops.
Do you reckon he's an anti-vaxxer?
Oh, aye.
He's 5G-er.
Yeah. 5G-er, flat earther, Brexit means Brexit.
So have we decided that Sam Allardyce is the Whopper champion?
I don't think he's Whopper champion. He's definitely in there. I mean, I'd like to put another late vote in there, having watched the darts the other night and sat and listened to Gary Anderson complain that he nearly got knocked out of his competition because his opponent went to the wrong table.
Yeah, I saw
he
that.
He got accused of farting earlier on in the year last year, and that was fair enough as well.
Couldn't believe what I was hearing. Gary Anderson threatening to retire just because the bloke went to the wrong table and Sky didn't pick up on it.
If that's dart, it's not for me.
I'd rather go and play golf.
Go play golf or something.
Everyone's probably switched off and turned Corrie on.
I have all joined Gu and Price's misses on the side.
Right, well, gentlemen, it has been an absolute pleasure to have a little bit of company for this afternoon. And I think, unless anyone has got anything more to add, we can probably leave it there for this afternoon.
Have we got a prediction to make for the sporting weekend like we normally do?
Yes, Jimmy, you were going to suggest that for this week. What have you got for us?
Jimmy's in the mud.
You've done me dirty.
How many goals are Liverpool going to score past Newcastle this afternoon, this evening?
I was just thinking that.
Four.
Who's...
I think I'd take four if you offered it me now.
3-0 Liverpool. Salah 2, Mane 1.
I'm going to go 4-1.
Who's scoring for Newcastle? Who's getting their one?
Not Paul Dummett. He was in co-op today. He's not in the squad. Scotty, how many
scoop.
Are you going?
We've got a scoop fight.
I'm going to go with... Everyone's going with 3 or 4. I'm going to go with 5. Up the Brucey.
Someone's going to score 10 bastards this year, so it might as well be tonight. 10. Gentlemen, an absolute pleasure.
As always.
Cheers, lads. Thanks for coming, lads. Don't get too comfortable.
Thanks, lads.
I'm the cat with the bass and drum going around like bum, bum, bum.